Hey, Mujer, it's Micaela, host of the Fearless Mujer podcast. What is the Fearless Mujer? It is a space for the mujer who ever felt rejected, misunderstood, and without a seat at the table. If you are ready to renew your mindset, let go of old versions that no longer serve you, and you're ready to be inspired to fearlessly pursue the dreams on your heart, then I invite you for a virtual cup of cafecito. You can listen to the Fearless Mujer on Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, and wherever you podcast.
What's up, scaredy cats? How are you guys doing today? Welcome back to another episode of the Scaredy Cats podcast. We are your hosts, Josue and Lisette, also known as Sway and Liz. And if you love true crime, scary stories, and more, make sure to add us to your favorites and tune in every week for a brand new episode.
And if you haven't followed us on our social media pages, go check us out at the Scaredy Cats podcast, and that's Scaredy Cats with a K. And also, if you want more content from us while you are waiting for a brand new podcast episode, follow our personal TikTok page called Sway and Liz, where we post daily videos. You can also find us on YouTube at Sway and Liz, where we upload new videos every Monday. So go peep our other pages. But now, before we continue on, we would like to mention a little disclaimer on this episode. What we will be discussing may be sensitive and graphic, so just a warning.
Yes, guys, we will be having another episode coming out this Friday, so if this episode is too much for you, there's always going to be another. But scaredy cats, today we are going to be talking about an ongoing case that is still yet to be solved. But before we do, we would like to send our condolences to the families who have lost their loved ones. It is truly such a terrible incident, and like, I hope whoever did this gets caught and this case gets solved very soon, because it's just so tragic and very sad. As we continue, it is honestly very scary because it's about the students from the University of Idaho that were murdered. And for those of you guys who don't know, we've actually said it on the podcast before, but we are from Idaho, and it's just terrifying knowing that something like that happened close by.
In Idaho, you don't hear too much about things like that happening often, and when it does, it kind of does like go everywhere. It's like, you know, wide stream, because everybody's like, this doesn't happen often here. It's so terrible because these poor kids, you know, like, I can't imagine, and especially how close it was, you know, towards Thanksgiving. It's so sad.
What makes me sad is like, they were around our age.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like they had their whole life ahead of them, and it's so messed up. Like, the person who did this, I just hope like they get caught.
Yeah.
Cause it's just like, poor kids, you know, that's just, it's honestly very sad. We're going to be talking about the entire timeline of events that have been released to the public about what happened before the murder and what the FBI has recently found.
So let's start from the very beginning. So Madison, Kaylee, Ethan, and Zanna were out late at night and were killed sometime after they returned home, which was closer to the early morning hours on November 13, 2022. Before the murder, there was a footage of Madison and Kaylee waiting in line at a food truck late at night called the Grub Truckers, which is a very popular wandering food truck that has been open since 2013, and it is actually located in downtown Moscow and is open until 2 a.m. late at night, which is, you know, pretty at the after hours, honestly. But the police said that Madison and Kaylee waited for about 10 minutes for their food, and during the time span, they can be seen talking with each other and other people standing in line, and most importantly, a man with a gray hoodie. And if you guys haven't seen this video, it's actually, it's everywhere.
It was released by the police,
So it's on YouTube, it's on TikTok, it's almost everywhere. So you guys, like, we can be describing it for you guys, but you guys can also see the video, because this guy is pretty sketchy in the background.
Like, he might just be like at the wrong place at the wrong time, but he looks very sketchy just standing there.
Yeah, he really does. But we say most importantly because as of late, people have started to notice that while Madison and Kaylee were ordering food, this person can be seen all the way in the back watching them. Then once Madison and Kaylee get their food, he looks at them and throws his hands up and begins to walk towards them very fast, almost as if he's following them. But the Moscow police haven't yet spoken on this. It's been confirmed though by the police that Madison and Kaylee had also stopped by a corner club bar that night before the food truck and arrived home around approximately 1:45 a.m. Along with that, both Ethan and Zanna, who were dating at the time, were also late at night at Sigma Chi, which is a frat house. It was believed that they were out partying, but also returned to the house Kaylee and Madison lived at around 1:45 a.m. And the students from Sigma Chi who have spoken to the police said that neither Ethan or Zanna seemed off, that they were pretty much having a great time laughing and partying with their friends. But keep in mind that Sigma Chi was just across the street from the house that these students live at.
We're just telling you to keep that in mind, because it is believed that maybe, you know, the boyfriend or somebody in there had an argument with one of the people. and like maybe something, it like it could be or could not be connected to it, but it's just like a connection people are trying to figure out.
Yeah, so it's a pause. Like right now, at the moment, like since it is an ongoing case, there's a few different possibilities as to what could have happened. So that's one of them.
Yeah, and two other students who also lived in the same home. This is a total of six students now. Were out late at night and returned home before any of them around approximately 1 a.m. These two students were the only two survivors. And later that morning at 11:58 a.m., the police department received a phone call from one of the surviving roommates. The police said that they had talked to a few people on the phone and that the surviving roommates had called a friend over to the house beforehand because they believed that one of the students who was killed was actually sleeping and unconscious, which in fact, like we said, they were dead. After the autopsy was conducted on the students, it revealed that all four of them had been stabbed, and some had defensive wounds on them showing that they were trying to fight back, but others seemed like they were just stabbed during their sleep. Police say that there were no signs of sexual assault or forced entry, but the medical examiner who performed the autopsy stated that the weapon used was a K-bar, which is a military knife. So with all that being said, the police have reason to believe that this was an isolated or targeted attack. But the community started to speculate that what if it was a planned murder because it happened before Thanksgiving break, noting that the students were getting ready to leave home to see their families, so it could be that the person who did this left Moscow after committing the crime. But something that I found very interesting though is that night of the murder at 3 a.m., the police stated that they received a phone call in regards to an alcohol-related incident from somebody at Sigma Chi. The police said that the person who made the phone call was standing on the field right next to the frat house. And I find that very interesting because like we said, Sigma Chi, the frat house that Ethan and Zanna attended earlier that night, was across the street from the house, like literally a minute walk. And like you can see that field where the student was at. If you like face forward, you can see the house of where Ethan and Zanna lived and the other four students, but the details of this call have not yet been disclosed, so it may or may not have anything to do with the murder, but it's still very interesting.
And it could be a possibility, but so far the Moscow Police Department has stated that over 200 pieces of digital evidence have been given to the FBI, and over 113 pieces of physical evidence such as fingerprints, hair, blood, and more has been submitted to the Idaho State Crime Lab for processing. But even then, with all these clues, it could still take some time to look through. But the cars of each of these victims were taken in for evidence this week, as well as hoping to find anything new that could help this case. An interesting detail is that behind the house was a parking lot to an apartment complex, which was located right next to the house that the students were staying at. The back of the house has a lot of windows, and the students on the second floor didn't have any curtains on their window, nor did the students from the third floor. So since there wasn't force of entry, it could be a possibility that the murderer could have jumped through the window and committed these crimes. But if this happened, wouldn't he or she had at least left some, you know, blood or something, like some kind of, you know, something behind, basically. Somehow they could have used like a sink to clean up. I mean, there was no sign of blood whatsoever in the bathroom or even by the doors nor by the windows, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
So like they kind of just cleaned it up.
Yeah, so like maybe just like walked right through. The door maybe was unlocked, the window was unlocked. Maybe they just walked right through. That's why there's no forced entry. So but even then, like they would have to like watch every single step. I mean, like we said, they're stabbing these students, so they had to have like blood splatter everywhere. You know, even like if there's a lot of blood, it could have gotten on their shoes, but there's like nothing, like nothing that indicates they went through the door or none of that. So that's why police believe that it was either a targeted murder or an isolated within amongst themselves,
which is pretty, I mean, it honestly seems, this case seems really complicated overall. But you might be thinking that they could have just cleaned it really well, but investigators have brought UV lights to indicate even the slightest bit of blood on the walls or anywhere else it could have splattered.
So even if he like opened the door, he or she opened the door and then cleaned it off, it's still gonna show like residue.
Yeah,
but they didn't find anything.
What if this person was already amongst them? I mean, this could have been, you know, what if it was a trusted friend or just, you know, it could have been somebody that followed them. Like, it's just, there's so many different things and maybes and what ifs. Like, I really do hope this case gets solved, you know?
Yeah, same here. But like, not only that, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that police said that they had a dog in the house, but the survivors didn't hear it bark throughout the night at all. So if it was somebody who entered the house, I believe it would have to have been someone the dog knew, because
if it didn't bark,
like it would start growling or barking.
Yeah.
But if it knows a person, it's just like not gonna bark at them. It'll just come up to them, you know? Just kind of like my dogs. They don't bark when I come up to them because they know me.
Yeah.
You know? But when other people, like strangers, like he barks at them. Like on a personal opinion, like these murders took place on the second and third floor, right? So either way, if somebody managed to get in and out without leaving any evidence, how did the surviving girls who were sleeping on the first floor not hear anything? Or why weren't they attacked either?
And they were the two who arrived there at 1 o'clock,
yeah,
right?
At 1 o'clock.
And the other ones arrived 45 minutes after. Mm-hmm. Unless somebody went in as they, you know, because they were sleeping. So what if they had left the door unlocked for the other kids to come inside? Who knows? I don't know.
Yeah.
There's a lot that could happen.
That could be a possibility. Yeah. Like, so they left the door unlocked and somebody went in there and hid.
Yeah,
and
they
waited until they fell asleep.
Yeah.
But, like, not only that, like, the police did state that two of the victims had defensive bruises on them, like, that they were fighting back, you know? Which, like, if you're fighting back and you're being stabbed, I would imagine that you'd be yelling or something, right?
Yeah.
Honestly. They were saying they were fighting back, but, like, you're telling me, like, while all this is happening, like, how did the two girls downstairs not hear anything? Like, it's in the same house.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm sure that these two girls feel a lot of guilt, you know? So we are sorry if we offend anyone, but it's just, like, that's kind of, like, our opinion on it. Like, it's just, a lot of this seems confusing and complicated.
Yeah. Like, we're not pointing any fingers or blaming anybody. It's just, like, what the police have said and the timeline of it, it just kind of seems shocking because...
There would have been, like, thumping or something.
I don't know, like, how... If, like, they have defensive wounds on them, that means they were yelling, fighting for their lives. I don't understand how, like, the girls from downstairs didn't hear anything. Like we said, they could have just been, like, deep sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, if the dog was actually there, it's just kind of odd that they didn't hear a bark.
Yeah,
you know, but I mean, while you're sleeping, I guess you can't really realize that the dog is barking or anything. Yeah. Either way, it's just, like, this timeline of events, the way they happen, is just so odd. They explain on the phone that I believe that this is what they said, that they were trying to check on the person because they thought they were unconscious, but the coroner who went and investigated the scene stated that it was, like, a gruesome scene, that there was, like, blood all over the bed. So I mean, I don't know how they could have confused that. Maybe it was dark in the room.
Yeah,
but like we said, we're not pointing fingers or blaming anybody, just the timeline that the police have, like, taken out of how these things happen.
Yeah,
it's kind of odd. And like I get the police, like, this is such a difficult case.
Yeah,
it has a bunch of, like, twists and turns. And then not only that, for it to happen during Thanksgiving break when, like, kids are leaving, it's just, that makes it even 10 times harder for them.
And I know another thing is, like, some of the parents of the victims have spoken up on the news and whatnot, and I know, like, it was one of them was, like, the dad of one of the girls, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, I might be one of the guys, but everybody was kind of mad at him because he was kind of, like, going on about this, but I'm like, you had to imagine this guy's going through a lot. But I also do know that any information that can be given out from any of them, you know, could jeopardize this whole entire case, because say, like, the killer is watching the news right now, he's being updated of, like, everything that's happening. He's like, okay, I need to make sure, you know, retrace my steps, make sure I cover this up and this up. So I think anything that is being said by anyone else other than the FBI or the police could jeopardize this whole thing, and could push him away from solving the case a lot sooner.
Yeah, and I know that's why a lot of people, like you said, are upset that the police haven't said anything.
Yeah,
but it's just like, if they do happen to say something and it's a key factor in the case, it could literally, like, put them 10 steps back, and all that process they made is just, they're gonna have to redo it again.
Yeah.
And it's just gonna make the case more difficult. So I believe the police is doing, like, what they have to do, but you have to understand that it's a tough case. Like, it's just all these little details that aren't adding up, and then one thing leads to another, then it just leads to a dead end. So then they go back to another lead and it leads to a dead end. And not only that, like, over 200 pieces and 113 stuff of evidence, that's gonna take a while to look through.
At the moment, this is all the information that the police department has given out, and these are a few creepy facts about the case. And it was confirmed by the police that one of the victims had 7 missed calls from her ex-boyfriend, who at first they believe could have been a part of this, but he has been cleared by the police, and the murder weapon hasn't been found.
And it was also believed that Kaylee Davis had a stalker.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't fully yet confirmed this, but it has been said by some of the students that they believe that she had a stalker.
And she, I'm sure, like, to, you know, with the other students, she probably mentioned a few things, and, you know, which it could be a key factor in the whole thing. But 3 weeks earlier, before the students were murdered, 3 miles away, an elderly couple had experienced something traumatizing. The couple let out their dog named Buddy, and after a few hours of no sign of the dog, they began to worry. And when they later found him, as stated by Buddy's owner, one side of him was as though they had filleted him and as if they were about to eat him. And nobody had been found in connection to this, which is so terrible. It's so sad. And it's just beyond me that somebody can actually do that, especially to an animal. Like, that's just,
like, it's scary. And, like, people believe that the person who did this probably could have been the person that committed these crimes.
Yeah.
Then again, it hasn't been confirmed yet. There's no connection to it. Mm-hmm. Nobody's been caught yet. So, I mean, I don't know, like, even just that happening, that's weird too. Yeah. That it happened 3 miles away.
Like we said, guys, this is still like going on, you know, but I wonder, you know, the two survivors, what was going on with them that same night as well? Like, if they had ran into somebody, like I said, what if they, before they went to sleep, they left the doors unlocked for the other kids to come in, and that's when somebody came in and was hiding and waited for the other kids. But that also still does mean that this was targeted, because they went for them and not the other two girls.
Yeah.
So it's like, there's just a lot to this puzzle, and I really do hope this gets solved as soon as it can, especially for, you know, the victims' families, because it's such a terrible thing, and you know, to go through for anybody, you know.
Or if somebody did somehow break into the house, they could have like had this like strategically planned to where like they commit these crimes and kind of make it like pin them to the two girls, because they're the biggest suspects right now. Like they're the police top suspects. So I don't know, that could have been another thing, like they committed it to and then just made it seem to pin it on two other people.
Correct me if I'm wrong, guys, the guy that they saw in the video with the hoodie, it said that he drove 5 hours. So after that, he was seen at the taco truck. Mm-hmm. It said that he drove 5 hours away to see his parents or his mom or something like that.
That night.
Yeah, but they're like, why would you go to a taco truck at that, you know, at that time of night, and then drive five hours somewhere else?
Yeah.
So like, that's another thing that everybody was kind of questioning this guy. But like you said, it could be someone in the wrong place at the wrong time, and they're just kind of like being in the spotlight because that's the only solid thing that they have at the moment. Yeah. So
I wonder, since it's like you said, it's an ongoing investigation, I wonder after that guy followed them, if he was, I wonder if any other businesses down the street have camera footage
of where he went after,
or if he was following them.
Yeah.
Because if they do, I feel like that would probably be like a crucial
piece
to the case. So, you know, with all that being said, we just want to offer our condolences again to the victims and their families. This is just super sad, and the person who did this, like, they need to be caught and, you know, pay for what they did. Like, it's just so sad what they did to these students. And I believe if you have any evidence or information that could help out the case, please, it's just like only serious evidence and information, please call the tip line at 208-883-7180.
And without further ado, thank you guys for tuning into today's episode. Don't forget, we have another podcast episode dropping this Friday at 3 p.m. as well. So turn on your notification and stay tuned. But we are out.
Peace.